It has been 50 days since the time for when the way sheaf would have been offered, that Joshua fulfilled after he had been resurrected 1989 years ago. It's incredible when you think of the time span that's gone by, and 1989 years ago today. Pentecost for the Israelites was referred to also as the Feast of Weeks, and it's sometimes referred to by God's church as the Feast of First Fruits. Every year, as we go through the Holy Days, we go back to Leviticus 23 at some point or another, just like in the Feast of Tabernacles. But in all the Holy Days, God commands us to speak about those Holy Days, the meaning of those Holy Days. So most certainly we're doing that today in this pre-recorded sermon for Pentecost. So again, let's turn over there now and take a look at that, because this is something we are to do year by year. And at some point, these things are referred to, obviously, as to the command that God gives us in keeping a holy convocation, coming together, assembling before Him as His people, and realizing that this is most important, the most important thing we do on any Sabbath, and especially on the high days, the holy days, is to meet before God, to come before God, to hear what He's prepared for us. And thankfully, we are able to do that, even at a time like this, not knowing exactly how large a group or groups are able to meet together by Pentecost, but it looks like it's just going to be that which is still in homes at this point. Leviticus 23 and verse 9. The Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and tell them, when you've come into the land which I give to you and shall reap the harvest of it, then you shall bring a sheaf of or from the first fruits." And that's not the word for first fruits, as we've gone over in times past. That word isn't first fruits at all. It's the beginning of the harvest. So when they first went out to begin harvest of wheat type of crop, that this was what they did. They took the first portion of that which, when they had started a beginning, from the beginning of their harvest, they would go out there and make certain that they had cut the sheaf then and saved it for a special occasion here, as it talks about. So you shall do that, the beginning of your harvest. So the point of this is that harvest in that part of the land, if you look at the area, especially that they went into the promised land around Jericho, it's lower in elevation, and those areas tend to receive more of the direct movement of the sun, and because of weather patterns and so forth, the crops grow faster there than it does higher up in the areas of Israel. And so this was a rather low region, and crops would be ready to harvest earlier on. And so this is what they did before this period of time came, when they began to harvest. They could begin to harvest things as they came into this particular region there, around the Jordan River there, and especially after they'd crossed. So it was ready at that point in time. They went out and did this very thing here. So it says, bring a portion of it, a sheaf of it, just a small bundle of it, put a wrapping around it, and take it to the priest. In this case here, it was to the high priest who was going to officiate and do this. So it was taken to the high priest to have a specific ceremony during the Days of Unleavened Bread. And that's what he's getting ready to talk about here. And so in verse 11 it says, "And he shall wave the sheaf before the Eternal." So not right when it was brought to him, not when it was taken to him right away, but at this moment in time that we understand during the Days of Unleavened Bread, after a particular Sabbath during that period of time, but the wave sheaf was something that had to happen within the Days of Unleavened Bread. So understanding that, as we have been able to learn over time here in a stronger way than ever before as far as the remnant church is concerned, this period of time when it was waved always had to be a day that fell, a Sunday that fell within the Days of Unleavened Bread. And so again, these things are referred to here then. And it says, "It shall be accepted for you on the day after the Sabbath. The priest shall wave it." So the day after the weekly Sabbath, this was a period of time here now that they were to wave this sheaf in the morning, on Sunday morning, always on a Sunday morning. And it says then in verse 12, "On that day when you wave the sheaf, you shall offer a male lamb of the first year that is without blemish, for a burnt offering unto the Eternal." Now, over and over again throughout this holy day period, there are these things that are mentioned on a regular basis here about lambs. And you look at the Day of Atonement and Leviticus 16 and some of the things mentioned there about the two lambs or the two goats. And every year, this was something that was to be done on these different holy days. But the lamb that represents Christ was always there. It was something to be offered up because, as it says here, it was to be without blemish. It wasn't to have any thing wrong with it in that respect. It had to be a good lamb, a healthy lamb, and so forth. So God made certain that those characteristics then of something they would look for physically would be something then that we could learn from later, because that's why it's written this way, so we could understand. Christ was without sin. There was no blemish in his life. And that's what we're to learn from this in this beginning portion here that follows the Passover period, now on into the days of unleavened bread. And so God is telling them then for this period of time here of what they're to be observing when this wave sheaf is offered during the days of unleavened bread, during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and very specific instructions here of things they were to do, but they couldn't do this until they came into the Promised Land. And the reason being, as we've gone over that in recent time now and covered some of this again as we did last year, and repeating some of these things even now, because this is something we look at year by year. So this is something they were doing at this particular time that God gave, as he has through all the things in the offerings, the sacrificial system, and the things connected to the holy days as are given here in Leviticus 23. They all mean something, just like the tabernacle itself. Everything that was constructed in it, all the ceremonies that were conducted by the priests and then the high priest into the holiest of holies once a year on the Day of Atonement. All these things have incredible meaning to them. And there are many things that we still haven't learned, that God hasn't yet revealed to us, that we fully don't understand of everything that was in the construction of the temple, if you will. And so again here, this very specific instruction being given at a moment in time when we realize, as I was saying, that they didn't have any harvest when they were in the wilderness for 40 years. They had manna. So they didn't have any harvest. They weren't able to do something like this. That's why God told them, when you come into the land that I promised you. So they weren't able to even observe this instruction that was given to them while they were in the wilderness about something they were to observe later on. God made it very specific. This is when it's going to begin. This is when you can begin to observe it. They weren't able to observe the wave sheaf offering. They weren't able to observe things like this at all in any fashion or form until a moment in time, the beginning of it, when they first came into the Promised Land. Awesome to know those things, because they all have great meaning to it. So again, this was followed by then, as you go through here, very specific instruction that tells how to know when Pentecost is to be observed. The only day, the only holy day, the only high day that God tells us to count to that point in time. Now, I feel like this has really taken on even more meaning now because of what we have gone through as far as some of the count leading up to the Pentecost, when Christ is going to return, and we'll come back to that in a little bit here. Verse 15. And so in this specific count, from when the wave sheaf was waved before God, that represents Christ, as we know the story, when he was resurrected and they came to the tomb early in the morning, and the women who were there, finally Christ spoke to Mary and talked to her, but they wanted to embrace him, but he wouldn't let them. He wouldn't let anyone touch him, because he said, in essence, that he had to go to God, to be received by God. In essence, is what he was referring to and what he was talking to them about. And so then they left because they were rushing back, because he told them to go back and tell the disciples that what had taken place. And on the way back, which wasn't very far between Jerusalem there, where he had been in the tomb, and then on back to the area of Bethany, where they had been staying during these periods of time, coming back and forth. And so, as they were going back then to tell the disciples about this, Christ appeared to them again and talked to Mary, spoke to them again, and this time he allowed them to embrace him. So, an incredible thing then to understand here that that's given to the church to grasp and comprehend. The world doesn't know anything about any of this. And yet this is the very thing that reveals in a very powerful way that this is when this had taken place. It didn't take very long for the priest to wave the sheaf. And it didn't take very long for him to be received by his father as the wave sheaf offering, the first of the first fruits of God's harvest, the first born of human flesh to be received into Elohim. And so God received him at that point in time. Then he, you know, right away after that happened, because it happened quickly, he went to them and talked to them, and they were able to embrace him then. Beautiful picture here. It gives more meaning and something that is rewarding in that respect that God has shared with us about why it's written that way and what took place at that time and why Christ gave those words, if you will, or spoke those words. So then in verse 15, it goes on to say, "And you shall count unto you from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering," in other words, from that Sunday, and here's something that was take place on that Sunday morning, but from that particular Sunday, it says, "Now begin a count. 7 Sabbaths shall be complete." So if you begin on a Sunday and you count 7 days, you come up to a Sabbath. And he said, count 7 Sabbaths and then the day after that. So that's the day of Pentecost, the Feast of First Fruits, the Feast of Weeks. So it says, "Even unto the day after," in other words, the next day after, "the 7th Sabbath, you shall number 50 days. Very specific. So it's a count. It is connected to, it's something you have to do to get to Pentecost, which reveals so much more as a part of God's plan, because Christ was the beginning of the first fruits, the wave sheaf, the beginning of the harvest. And it's all beautiful how God has given these things and the symbolism of these things that we learn from and are inspired by. So it says that this time here then is a time that you shall offer a new meat offering unto the Eternal, the day of Pentecost. And it ties in together then, as we have learned, because of the wave sheaf, we came to understand in a very deep way then a greater meaning for Pentecost, that it's about the wave loaves. Now, we know the wave loaves were offered before God on Pentecost, but to tie that period in together now to have far greater meaning isn't something we've always known in God's church. We haven't been able to do that. And being able to understand that it's totally tied together in that period of time. And this counting of 50 ties it together in great meaning for the rest of that family in the first fruits and the first resurrection. It's beautiful what God has given. So the truth and reality is, again, that the children of Israel were not able to keep the observance of the wave sheaf offering because they were not able to reap the harvest of the land until they came into the promised land, as I just covered. And when they did come into the promised land, that was the beginning of the first count ever for Pentecost that was observed at that time. The very first count, the very first observance of Pentecost as well, because this was a period of time of something that God said, this is when you begin to do it, when you first come into the land, the promised land. And so again, it ties in that picture in a beautiful way, that they go together. You can't separate them. And so the observance of those things beginning at that time. And the reason I mention these things is because there's been a concept or an idea that from the very beginning of Adam and on, that they understood all the holy days and they'd been given. And the reality is, through time here, we've learned that God gives things in a progressive revelation through time, judges people according to what he has given to them, which mostly is about how to live life in a relationship toward him and honoring him, certainly the Sabbath day and observing and keeping that, and how to treat others, how to think toward others, how to honor God and keep God first in your life. That was what was shown to them, given to them, but very few ever did it, except those that God drew and worked with, the first being Abel. And so we have this history of things that have happened, but they didn't understand. They didn't know the holy days. They weren't given and observed. They weren't even observed until this period of time when God gave it to them in the wilderness during that 40 years. There were other of the holy days they could begin to observe, but not the wave sheaf and not the wave loaves, because so those days wouldn't have the same meaning in them until this period of time when they were able to observe it the way God commanded them to then in Leviticus. So again, Pentecost contains a lot of meaning, and its complete fulfillment really covers a fairly long span of time if you look at it. So, because it's all about first fruits, that's that 6,000 years and the process, and then other things that are represented and pictured in this particular day as well, because there's a lot of meaning contained in the day of Pentecost and God pouring out His Holy Spirit, all these things that have such incredible meaning, and all of that about the first fruits. Christ, the first of the first fruits, and then the rest of the first fruits, who will come with Him when He returns. Beautiful. So again, the simple counting from the time of the wave sheaf to Pentecost in itself has great meaning, as I said, that ties together so much of the meaning of Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread through to Pentecost, obviously. Now, we know the different things here that are represented, things that are that have great meaning in this particular day that happened at different times throughout history that God has continued progressively revealed more and more. So we understand that Pentecost is the day that God gave the Israelites the Ten Commandments, gave them His law. And what an incredible thing, a law to live by. The first four commandments is about our relationship with the great God of the universe, how to have a right relationship. And if that relationship isn't worked upon, if from the very beginning of the commandments there, if God isn't first in our life, isn't placed first, and no idols before Him and all the other things that are mentioned there, if God isn't first, then we can't go on to properly even begin to think about fulfilling the others in relationships with other people, because that's the last six commandments. And yet people tend to focus on the last six, if they look at anything about law at all. So especially the one about not killing, they people kind of get that, not stealing from others and so forth, and all through there. Some of them they are able to discard far more easily. But those can't be right if the first isn't right. And that's the whole point of it all, that if we're not right with God, we're not going to receive the kind of help that we need. And so that comes a little bit later, doesn't it? 31 AD, God poured out His Holy Spirit, because we realize that just because the law was given to the Israelites, they couldn't keep it. They tried, some tried, to keep it on a physical plane. Frankly, those who strive to obey what they understand even physically, the law of tithing. There are people who do that in the world that don't understand the truth, that aren't called, and they're blessed because of it, because it's a living law in life. That in their mind, if they're giving that for a right purpose, God blesses them, though they don't understand the rest. And if they obey the laws of how to live toward others, then they're blessed because of that. It's about right relationships with people and how to have right relationships. Just I think of the one about adultery alone. You think of the world today, and it's just rampant out there. Being married to one person, being faithful in that, is something that's so foreign to people's minds. It's more today like we'll live together for a time, and if it works out, then maybe we'll get married. And God's not in the picture at all. It's not like that anymore. People are getting farther and farther away from that all the time. So much of that because of communication, movies, things that are out here now that move people more quickly towards sin than ever before, that mold and fashion minds. Young people see things on TV. They become glued to it from an early age, the zombies, and they just suck this stuff in. That's the way it is in the world. And people think that's the way life is. They watch movies about relationships and about people, and that's not, it's just not what life is like. It really isn't as a whole. And what life they do portray is not good, because the world doesn't understand what is good, so it doesn't try to portray those things that are good by any measure. So again, Pentecost, the giving of the Ten Commandments, several hundred years later, the giving of the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost in 31 AD to reveal to mankind in a very powerful way, to the church, that you can't live this way of life without God's help, without God's Spirit, without something that helps the mind to think differently. And that's a beautiful thing. Repent. Think differently. The process of transformation of the mind. Once we choose and desire, I want to think differently. I don't want to sin. I want to be at one with God. Beautiful picture. And these things all pictured in this particular day in Pentecost. It is on a Pentecost when Joshua the Christ will return to this earth. When he returns as the Lion of God, the King of Kings over all nations. Now, that being absolute in our minds hasn't been there in times past. And though there was some wonder about that at different times, I believe that Mr. Armstrong made that comment, wasn't certain about when that coming would be, whether it be on a trumpet or a Pentecost, but then in time that was totally lost and kind of just lumped in with Pentecost by ministers and what was being taught in the church. And so finally God brought us back to that point to address it very powerfully, so gave us the ability to see and understand how powerfully, because of the wave sheaf and the wave loaves and the tie-in together of that, of all the first fruits, that this is the point in time then. This is when Christ will return with the wave loaves. Awesome, beautiful, really is. And so God has given us that understanding in a very powerful way, and something we hold fast to in a very meaningful way because of what we've been going through for some time now. And in a countdown that we have been given toward the end here to observe, to watch, to learn from, to be inspired by, to focus upon in the sense of a race we're in, and looking to various things and looking back, if for no other reason than to be able to look back and look at the awesomeness as it's written about in chapter 9, the timelines, how everything has worked out, that shows the hand of God in it, that those things are beyond just chance. There's no such thing in this case. Absolute design, just as much as things in the universe, just as much as the human body, just as much as human life, just as much as any life out here, that it required one who was a designer and the creator and has brought all these things, given all these things to us. So it is with what we've gone through. So being very inspiring just seeing that, and for a time there looking ahead as well, because it gave us a focus to keep pressing forward, even when we were shattered by various things, because that was shaking. That was a shattering type of thing that jolted us, 2012. And then later on to learn and look back at how important 2008 really was, God's final witness. It was alive. It has great meaning to it. And it's been used in a very powerful way to help us to grow more, to grow faster spiritually. And especially when you consider that some who were rejected at that particular time, who had been drawn and called to have opportunity to be a part of 144,000, who because of their sins and those things being brought out, that they weren't qualified. They didn't. God didn't bring them along. He said no. You know, and they were rejected. And so others had to take their place. That's why I love the scripture when it talks about to the church in Philadelphia, which applies to all eras, but don't let any man, don't let any person take your crown. And yet that's happened for over 2,000 years now, where people have quit for whatever reason, have given up, even toward I think of all times to do that toward the end. And this still goes on. And to just give up, or not to keep focused and not to appreciate deeply how much God has given to us, it's mind-boggling. It really is, but it reveals the way the human mind is and the battle that's there. And it helps us to become more convicted that we've got to keep fighting, that you keep getting up, that you keep repenting. And there's a character then that's developed in us. And with living God's way and acknowledging constantly, I am wrong, God is right. I'm filled with sin, I'm filled my pride, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes. That's what we're to acknowledge in our carnal, physical lives. We're totally selfish as a whole, except for that part of conversion that's taken place in us, where we've grown spiritually because of the transformation of the mind, because of God's Spirit. Thank God for that. Then that gives us encouragement then to see and know what can be accomplished, to see the change that's taken place over time, and that hope then that we have to the end, and to realize nothing's going to dissuade us. That conviction, if indeed that's a conviction. So again, those things that have tied together from the wave sheaf to the wave loaves, when the 144,000 in Christ are going to return. So let's go back again and pick up Leviticus 23, verse 16. So it says, "Even unto the day after the seventh Sabbath, you shall number 50 days, and you shall offer a new meat offering unto the Eternal. You shall bring out of your habitations two wave loaves." So again, this was to be taken from, as it talks about here, of two-tenths of a measurement. And so this, the flour that was to be used and what was to be put into to making of making this bread. And it was to be baked with leaven. The dough was to have leavening in it. It was to rise. Again, depicting something that Christ was without blemish. He was without sin. And the first of the first fruits, the beginning of the harvest. And then there is that other part, the wave loaves, that represents 144,000. One wave loaf having to do with the period of time up to the time that Christ came as our Passover, and that period that we refer to so commonly as the Old Testament period, and then that which continued on with the period of the church, with the apostles and so forth, and continuing on up to our present time, then the other wave loaf, after Christ had come, and those things about Passover were deeply seen and known and understood then. And so they lived by faith of the Messiah coming before that. God blessed them. Their faith was accounted as righteousness. Those things we see about Abraham, of what God said, of what God inspired through Paul to write in the book of Romans. And now we have a living kind of faith, very powerful in the sense of all that's given to us, because since the time of Christ, the church has been given so much that they didn't have in the first 4,000 years. And I repeat this often because so often we just don't grasp how blessed we are, especially now at the end of this 2,000-year period, when so much more has been given because of the preparation for Christ's return, Christ's coming. And so this instruction here then given of the two wave loaves of two-tenths measurement, they shall be a fine flour, they shall be baked with leaven, because we have sin in our life. And so we're puffed up, and we will be until that change comes when we are no longer in a physical body. They are the first fruits unto the Eternal. So again, that beautiful picture here. The first, the beginning of the harvest, the first fruits, Christ, the wave sheaf, now down to the wave loaves, who have sin, who are puffed up, and that's their battle all their life. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life, sin in life, and constantly repenting, desiring to come out of that. Leaven. Leaven's just there. And there's always going to be leaven there until the change comes. Then dropping on down to verse 20, continuing on. "And the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits for a wave offering before the Eternal." So this is where we came to see and grasp in a deeper way on a spiritual plane, as God revealed it to us, the importance of the wave sheaf being waved before God and being accepted, and now the wave loaves on the day of Pentecost. And God does things on the days and in the meaning of those things when he gives something like this. Just like the wave sheaf, something to be done on that day. Christ died on Passover. He was resurrected at a specific time, at the end of a Sabbath. And beginning then on that first day of the week would be the time that he would be able to have that, or wave before God, if you will, as our wave sheaf on that morning. So the timing of everything has such meaning to it. He couldn't be received any other time, and so the wave loaves. So when do they become significant on the earth? On the day of Pentecost, after they're resurrected and received by God. So again, this has helped drive that home in the last few years here, the last 3 years or so, in a very powerful way, to recognize the timing of some of these things in a better way than we've ever known. And so we go through a lot of things sometimes to get where we are. And I think of the third book that was written, of some of those things that weren't to happen at those specific times. They could, if indeed that would be the day they would be received on the earth. But when they're resurrected, they are to be received of God. So again, here, there are things here that God's continually adding to and help us to see in a more refined and perfect way. And that's a great blessing. So we learn through that process so often because we go through things and we learn what is wrong. And as I've mentioned so many times, so many of the things I've learned in my life are the things that are wrong. God brings to that point to being able to see this is wrong and then changing, repenting. And that's what our life is all about. It truly is. And so again here, and the priest shall wave them with the bread of the first fruits for a wave offering before the Eternal with the two lambs. Two lambs, two wave loaves, two periods of time. So a lamb for each period of time. One that they had faith in, his coming, not knowing he was coming as a Passover. And then afterwards, the living by faith of having known and believed those things that are written about him, that he is the Passover and he will return as the King of Kings. And he is our high priest. So all these things that enter in. And with the two lambs, and they shall be holy to the Eternal for the priest. So counting from the wave sheaf to the wave loaves, again, ties these two together in such an incredible way. They truly do. I love it. It's beautiful. It really is. To me, it's very moving to see these kinds of things because we haven't always had this. And I guess because I've been being called in 1969 and living all those years and experiencing all the things that we have that I did during that time and others who have had similar things before and after that period of time. We only have a few that are before that time as a whole within the church that have been awakened. And then some after that time who are apart still in that sense of having been awakened after the apostasy. And in some ways, the more history we have of some of those things in our lives, it's one thing to read about them, to know them, to believe them, of what's written. It's another thing to experience and live those things that because they're part of you, they're in you. And I think because of that, that helps in a great way to have a greater appreciation then of the things that have been revealed. As they've been revealed, they have a lot more meaning then. So that's why I get excited about them when I talk about them, because we haven't always had these things. And much of what I've already talked about already here in this sermon about Pentecost, we haven't had as far as the church is concerned until a period of time in the last decade here, and some just in the last few years. Now, to me, that's awesome. We get a little bit of time, we receive a little bit of it at a time, and sometimes if we don't think about it, we don't realize, man, yeah, we haven't had that as far as the church is concerned very long. Look how incredibly blessed I am to see, to have what I have. And so with that, then comes a greater appreciation, a greater thankfulness, and a greater inspiration in that sense if we are able to focus on such things. So again here, this tying in together of these things is absolutely incredible. Of the first fruits to be accepted by God and how they are, the wave sheaf and then the wave loaves. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Now I'm going to repeat the paragraph that I mentioned a little bit earlier here, and I want to read this word for word of what I stated, and then I'm going to add to that and what's stated. The truth and reality is that the children of Israel were not able to keep this observance of the wave sheaf offering because they were not able to reap the harvest of the land until they came into the promised land. When they did come into the promised land, that was the beginning for the first count ever for Pentecost that was observed at that time. Beautiful. Because we've been given something incredibly great and far greater because of the meaning of certain things that are taking place right now. Because now so many of these things are about to a point of being fulfilled on a plane that all these things before had pictured. The wave sheaf. Now, he's our high priest, but the wave loaves, still waiting a long time before that would come along, before that would come to a point in time, because it's taken 6,000 years to gather that measurement, those two measurements of flour of the first for the first fruits, 6,000 years. And now the bread is just about baked. I guess I could put it that way. It's just about finished. Taking a long time to get it ready, to prepare it, and then to bake it. Because that has to do then with the 144,000 when they're waved as wave loaves before God. And we're almost there. And the count then becomes even that much more important to us because it's leading up to the fulfillment now of Pentecost in what God has revealed to us just in recent time now, of this tying together in a very powerful way, when Christ is returning and why at that time, and what it means, the rest of the first fruits of God to be received by Him. And so again here, when they did come into the Promised Land, that was the beginning for the first count ever for Pentecost that was ever observed at that time. Now adding to that, after that first count following the first wave sheaf offering, then came the very first observance of the holy day of Pentecost. Beyond that, following much later in time, was indeed another great Pentecost when God established His church and began pouring out His Spirit upon it. And so, again, all these things, it has such incredible meaning. The wave sheaf, and now the focus more on the rest of the 144,000, the rest of the first fruits, and what it meant to establish the church on Pentecost, because it's so much about the first fruits, obviously, the rest of the loaves, that second loaf, if you will, the beginning for that which was going to be done, which is actually has more in it in one respect, if we understand it. The example there is given of two measurements, but we understand that the greater portion of those who have been called has been in this last portion of 2,000 years, nearly 2,000 years. Going on here then, I wanted to read these. I wanted to write these down just exactly as they are to talk about them, to be able to get this just right. But there's also a great type of that first count for Pentecost that is very soon to be fulfilled. And that's when a far greater fulfillment of entering into another promised land takes place at Christ and the 144,000 coming in God's kingdom. Now that's beautiful, because it's going to be on a Pentecost, and it's going to be far greater. It's going to have, because it's a greater fulfillment in the sense of all these other things to get us where we are, the commandments, God's Holy Spirit, and now finally the portion to understand the wave loaves. Finally, it's complete. The first fruits, complete. And this pictures it all. And so that promised land, the first ability to enter into it on a spiritual plane, we're almost there. They were looking at something on a very physical plane, going into a promised land. But what God has promised is far greater concerning Israel, the Israel of God, and that which is to be a part of an inheritance and a part of spirit life from here on, things we can't even begin to comprehend, but are excited about and look forward to with great anticipation. And so I think of timing and where we are right now. And I think about the new book, when the countdown ends. And knowing it's mostly now complete and on the website, by mostly complete, every once in a while we have to tweak it here and there. I've had to write a couple different things to focus more on, as an example here, the name of Joshua and some of the arguments about those kinds of things, to focus more on the area that really needs to be focused upon in a stronger way, in a better way, and especially because of the English language, because people can debate and argue about Greek and what happened back there and Latin, but you can't prove it. It's an endless argument. It goes back and forth. But when you get to the English portions of it, very powerful what God has given to us, and to understand why His name is not Jesus. So we focus more on the English part of it, which is what God led me to, if you will, has led us to as a church. And so, again, part of the book tweaked still before everything was completed here. And then just a few little things here and there that sometimes when you're editing, you can read something and see it and you know what it's saying, but sometimes you can just go over something so easily without seeing it. And then whammo, it comes up. But anyway, it's getting refined and better all the time, and I'm excited by that. So going on here then with some of this and what we're looking at now and timing, this becomes really important to me, should be important, I believe, to every one of us then, to understand some of the things we're going to focus on now. Because toward the end of the final chapter, chapter 9, there are seven end-time prophetic periods of 1,260 days that is explained there in chapter 9. To me, these are awesomely moving. They truly are. As I said, it shows the author. It shows the designer. It shows the creator. It shows the one, it shows God's handiwork in it, because there's no other way these things could be as they are. And that should be exceedingly inspiring to us. So the first five counts of 1260 days that led up to Pentecost of 2012, beautiful, powerful, inspiring. And coupling that then with another number, 70, has great meaning to it, because we know the meaning of that number, how 70 is a number used prophetically for Christ's coming. And that's very moving then, because we went through five periods coupled with Christ's coming. It carried a very clear picture. So we never understood in the church. We had wondered about the 3.5 years and the 42 months and 1260 days and time and half a time and all those things, knowing the time periods that were there. But to know what it was all about and how it was going to pan out, we didn't know until afterward. And we've been able to look back and then have a little bit of foresight to look forward, because God gave that to us, as far as 2008 being the year of God's final witness. That's very powerful, brethren. It really is. And then leading up to 2012, adding a 70 to it, very clear message from God Almighty, truly. Just like the 280 days after the apostasy, very powerful message to God's people that we had an apostasy. That was what Paul was inspired to write about in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the man of sin, the son of perdition. What happened to the church because the love of God waxed cold in people's lives? They loved something else rather than loving God's word, God's truth. And that happened to the church. And as we all fell asleep at that period of time. So incredible things have happened in God's church. So we've gone through that. We've experienced that. Then the last two counts of two more end time periods of 1260 days is addressed there in chapter 9, together with another unique number, the count of 50. Now, we just talked about the tie-in together between what was pictured in Christ as the way sheaf. We have 70 that pictures that his coming on the first five periods there, and then finally two more, and with that the number of 50, which is very clearly, so we have the first of the first fruits and his coming, and then we have 50 that is about the wave loaves. It's about the rest of the first fruits. And I think, what an incredible thing that God has given. And then as writing some of that chapter and then having gone back and rewriting it again, I'm sometimes amazed how God works and leads us and guides us and gives understanding of things we grow in. There's been a lot of growth and understanding of things here just in the writing of those last few chapters. And some things I've already talked about, some things are there to make them clearer, to make them more beautiful, more awesome as far as God's word's concerned. And so it is in this particular case here of what God has made very clear and was finally clear in the writing of this chapter because of the number 7. Going through those charts and talking about 7 and 7 and 7 over and over again. The number that God has given for that which is complete, completeness. The 7-day Sabbath, the 7 annual holy days, 7,000 years. On and on it goes. Christ coming. 7. 7 times 10, which has meaning as well, that we'll be given more of as time goes on. So anyway, it's awesome to see some of these things, to understand some of these things, and I just wanted to give a portion of what is written. And I'm just trying to take a look here to see how I've done this exactly. And the writing here, I wish I had mentioned the specific section, but I didn't. But I want to read from the portion of that of the book there. Yeah, here it is. The end of the countdown, question mark. So I'm going to take some time here and go through this last portion of chapter 9 and read this and comment on some of it as we go along. very meaningful, very powerful, what God has given. Now, we've had some questions here and there because of people reading some of this and wondering about some of this and looking at markers and what does this mean now for the church, and because of some pretty dogmatic statements that were made here as well about that which is complete. So, Pentecost. God let me know very early on here, it will be addressed in Pentecost. So here we are addressing it. So question mark, the end of the countdown, as the last portion here is entitled. Although God's church continues to look at the possibility of more prophetic markers to be fulfilled, which we do, we're continually looking ahead, which is explained here. So we're still looking ahead. Now, it wasn't to be put in the book that way of what some of those might be. If someone truly wants to learn to know and keep abreast of it when it becomes clear, as I address here, as we go along, then that'll be made known within the church and to those who are receiving those messages Sabbath by Sabbath. So although God's church continues to look at the possibility of more prophetic markers to be fulfilled, God has not revealed any that have the kind of meaning that's contained in the period from the apostasy up to Pentecost of 2019. He hasn't. He hasn't shown those. Looked ahead, looked at different time periods. We realize we know certain truths about Pentecost. That's why we keep focused on Pentecost. And there'll be markers in that alone, as I talk about here in a little bit. But to know whether it's a period from 2019 for 3.5 years that God can make certain things work out. I don't know. In between that, because that's what we need to understand, that there's something unique taking place right now that God hasn't shown us. And we need to understand that what we did in coming up to 2019 completes a very important part of God's plan concerning the end time here. And that to me is inspiring. It truly is. What is in front? I don't have the foggiest, but I'm excited by what God is showing here. There may be events that have already begun after that Pentecost that are rapidly leading up to a third world war that have not yet been seen and have not yet been revealed. A long time ago, God blessed me to see, to understand that there very well is that which is never revealed at certain moments in time because of a war that's going on. And it's in the spirit world. It's been going on for a long time, but it's intensifying. And as we get closer to Christ's coming, that war that we don't know about, that we don't see, is ongoing. And it's a powerful thing. It truly is, on a spirit realm. And so there are those things you don't tell an enemy that God's going to bring about, that God's going to fulfill, even within the spirit world, even within the angelic realm. There are those things that God is going to fulfill there that he hasn't revealed to the church, hasn't revealed about those things and why those things are taking place and why they've happened. We only see a little bit of it and understand a portion of it, but there's a lot more going on that goes way back in time and coming to a crescendo now that we don't have to know until we become a part of God's family. Then he'll let us know more, obviously. And so again, there may be events that have already begun after that Pentecost, after Pentecost of 2019, just last year, that are already leading up to a third world war that have not yet been seen and have not yet been revealed. But I'd interject here too something else thinking about today and yesterday. What an incredible thing to understand again some of this timing of where we are, knowing that, well, we know when the first four events of the first four trumpets, the trumpets are going to take place, having to do with the United States. And we realize that isn't going to start until a sealing is complete. And I couldn't help but think, what an awesome thing here to think that we could be really close to that, because God knows how long it takes to prepare, to mold and fashion certain ones, and the last to become a part of that, that are being worked with to a point where God says, now I know you, that because of that, certain things are maybe speeding up, beginning to work forward. But God is going to work those things out according to his plan anyway. But awesome to consider some of those things, because the reality is some of it's there. Going on. However, what is clear is that there have been seven complete end-time prophetic periods of 1260 days. So when God shows you that and says, we've had seven, this is it, of 1260 days. Those periods are now complete. They've been fulfilled. All that God was going to work with and accomplish in that period of time has now been accomplished. That reveal a clear countdown to Christ's coming. It would be wise to remember that the number seven is used for completeness in God's plan. At this point, it appears that the prophetic countdown to Christ's coming is complete, and therefore the prophetic countdown is over. So it's the prophetic part of it that has been completed. And what is in front of us? God will show us the significance of those things at some point in time. And it'll be exciting, it'll be inspiring to us, and we'll be dumbfounded by it when we see it and what it all means. But it goes above and beyond the seven that we already have, and not tied together specifically with the seven. So complete means complete. This should be exceedingly sobering to all because this coincides with what has already been fulfilled in the book of Revelation. So what's that about? Well, going on. God has clearly revealed to His church that as soon as the sealing of the 144,000 is complete, then the events of the first four trumpets will be unleashed upon the United States. Everything to this point has been prophetically fulfilled as all seven seals of Revelation have been opened. They've all been opened. It's one thing that struck me in a deeper way going through the book, to think of all the time we've gone through and that what began in the first book, the prophesied end time, where we were, what we saw at that point in time, and then continuing on to be at this point now, because we were looking ahead still at various seals to be opened and not knowing fully what they were all going to be and how it was going to come about. And now here we are, seven have been opened. God has revealed that very powerfully so. So all, again, as all seven seals of Revelation have been opened and the seven trumpets have already been announced. Those catastrophic events announced by the trumpets will begin once the sealing of all the first fruits is complete. If one can begin to grasp how God gave John the book of Revelation to write, of which the vast majority concerns the period of the countdown that began on the day of the apostasy, the first seal opened, then seeing what has already been fulfilled should be exceedingly sobering. And you know, if someone reads through the entire book by this point in time, even on a physical plane, if they've had enough interest to keep going, perhaps indeed God's Spirit drawing them, working with them, because He's going to begin doing that more and more as people will listen to Him. And if someone will listen and come to this point, for most who are at this point, it will have a soberness. A sobering moment to it in that respect of thinking about some of this. So again, seeing what has already been fulfilled should be exceedingly sobering. And the more that someone is responding to God, being drawn by God's Spirit, the more sobering they will be. The more sobering it will be what they're reading. The seven seals of Revelation have all been opened. The seven trumpets of that last seal have all sounded. And the events they have announced can begin at any moment. We don't know when that is. Could begin at any moment. Maybe by the time Pentecost. I don't know. There could be something that take place around that time. We don't know. But we keep looking. Pentecost to Pentecost. We keep looking forward. We're not to 2020 Pentecost yet. You are today as you're listening to this. But anyway. This book is entitled When the Countdown Ends. It has been stated repeatedly that there is a countdown leading up to World War III and Christ's return. That is in God's hands. There's a period of time that God already knows the amount, the magnitude of what can happen to this earth, of what He's going to allow and what He's not going to allow, and a timing involved in those kinds of things. We just don't know what that is and may not be shown that until after it's over with. And then God show us what it all was. What we experienced. It is my strongest belief that the count of prophetic 1260-day periods has been completed and that countdown has ended, which was on the Pentecost of 2019. So we observed a very powerful thing when we got to 2012 and now 2019. And to me, in this respect, God is making it very clear that prophetic countdown of the 1260 days is completed. Whatever was to be accomplished and fulfilled now has been fully accomplished. However, that does not mean that World War III or Christ's return had to happen on that day. It doesn't mean that that's what we're talking about. We're talking about end-time prophetic periods of 1260 days, seven of them now completed, and that says it all. There's no more of that particular count taking place. Now, will there be a continuing count of something or count added on to it? Well, just like the 50 or the 70 and then the 50, there's going to be something here that's going to have great meaning to it when it's all said and done. Again, God will show that to us in His time. We should have learned enough by now to realize, to know, to be convicted of that truth that God will show us in His time. We don't have to know everything in advance. God will show us, and we continue to follow, and we wait upon God to do things according to His will. It should be obvious that there is still a prophetic countdown that will one day be revealed that led right up to Christ's coming. How is that? It is by the knowledge that Christ will return on a Pentecost, but God has not revealed on what Pentecost that will be. So God's church will continue to watch for any new prophetic markers and inform everyone of those as soon as they are revealed, if there is time and ability to do so. Because there's going to come a time when no more can be said. What God has revealed is that the end time countdown that led up to its complete prophetic fulfillment on the Pentecost of 2019 has been accomplished. All of this cries out that World War III is at our doorstep, and there is not much time to prepare. So when I look back and think how long it's been since the apostasy, I'm kind of dumbfounded by it. To go through seven prophetic, that's for us in our thinking, in our lives, that's a long period of time. It's almost surreal to think back of where I was at the time of the apostasy and how much distance we have come since that time. How much time. And in that respect, as far as our human life is concerned, it's been quite a long time. But in God's, not very long. Not very long at all. It's just that we are focused more because of our short span of life, on shorter periods of time. Certain things affect us in different ways. And we can't see that in the same way, except that God give us help and ability to see something on a bigger scale. And then to that point, we can. But we tend to think in shorter spans, shorter periods. So it's really a very short span here, but for us as human beings, rather long. So that period of time that we have, a year, a month, a week, I don't know. But it's not very long. Things are happening in the world. A year, 2 years, 3 years, I don't know. But we keep going forward. And God will show us in His time. And it'll go by rather quickly. I marvel. I think back at a time not too long ago, and yet it seems so distant. I don't even think about it. At times there are certain things that might spark a memory of being over in Indiana for a little over 3 years period of time and away from home for a long period of time and then back and finally out. It hasn't been that long, but it seems like it's so distant, and the things that lived at that point in time, and it's kind of surreal in itself. But time goes on and you wonder, where did it go? Anyway, incredible. So again, all this cries out that World War III is at our doorstep, and there is not much time to prepare. So hopefully that hits us, to realize all these things of seven that are now complete, and there's not much in front anymore. And I'll come back to that in a moment here. Going on, there are many who have mocked God's church for warning people to prepare physically for what is coming by having a stock of food and other needful items that can last for 1 to 3 months. This isn't as funny or weird to those people as it once seemed to be. with the pandemic, now people can more clearly grasp the need for such a thing, and that will become far more essential once a war begins. People have seen absolutely nothing yet. Nothing compared to what's coming, and that's what we really saved up for something, because we're still able to go to the stores. So it wasn't for the pandemic. It's for what's still to come. Even something such as storing water becomes far more important, and or the use of a gravity-type water filtering system. So talking about how the Big Berkey is one of the best. You know, you don't need electricity, won't be there. So to pour something in a container and have it come out purified and cleansed, it's going to be worth its weight in gold in many cases. It really is, because it's not going to be abundant. Things of water going into a tower and then coming out of a spigot through a toilet. You think toilet paper was important? Water is going to become a whole lot more important, because now you're going to have a buildup. What do you do with that? Well, people are going to have to think, become a little innovative and different ideas of things that they can do, because things are not going to be the same, and they're going to be a whole lot worse than what they are now or what they've experienced. Going on, the event of the COVID-19 pandemic is proving to be the catalyst that will push nations into final events that are about to be unleashed on a very unsuspecting world. And it's oblivious to it, especially in this country. Maybe say in the Western world, oblivious. The impact of the economic crisis that is now looming all over the world cannot be swept under the rug as it was in 2008. What's coming is far worse economically than what we could have ever imagined. And the reality just is not hitting people. It's like, just print more money. Well, let's give more help. Let's do this. Let's do that. And it's insanity. It's true insanity. Nations are quickly hurtling toward a day of reckoning, and that is now pushing nations toward war. If we know, and you think, if people could just reason a little bit and think about some of this and be awakened, but they can't be, because as the church was asleep at one time, the world is asleep to what's in front of it and can't see it. We see it. It should be clear. I hope you see it, that how close this is, and it's pushing nations towards war. It's in the news now more than ever, these little things that are coming out, and it's like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you couldn't find articles like this. Now almost every week there's some mention of something like this, and especially with nations pushing a little bit toward each other and getting angrier about various things, but still holding that anger back. But how long? Well, in the midst of some of that, somebody will be planning. Going on, the global economy is beginning to implode. And how many articles do you read anymore saying exactly that? They're talking about things imploding. They're talking about things have already started imploding. This began to accelerate well before the pandemic as a result of tariff wars. You know, if you look back in time, people are starting to acknowledge that now as well in articles. There have been tariff wars going on, but not a lot of people really looking at them as being a type of warfare. But that's what they are. They're the type of warfare that leads into real war. That's kind of been the history of certain things that have happened in not too far back, a few decades. And so you see these things taking place, and this is what it's leading to. As a result of tariff wars that have thrown many nations into economic frustration with one another and massive disarray in the reliability of their own economic posturing and future plans, these are the kinds of things that push nations into war. We are there. We're there. It's just a matter of time. And we know what that time is. And as soon as that hits, it'll begin. Add to all this the escalating battle that has been taking place with just one commodity, oil. Going on. This one commodity alone has been the catalyst for wars over the past few decades. People haven't awakened to that one yet and understand that things that have been done in the Middle East are motivated by war. Things that happened in Iraq, motivated by oil, that lead to war. That which happened in Kuwait It was about oil. It was about oil more than anything else. And yet, we have this noble thing. We're trying to protect them. We're trying to help them. And no, we're protecting something else. And it's selfish interests, our interests, when you talk about nations, how they think. Just like people, we're selfish by nature, inward. Nations corrupt, corruption enters in and becomes far more corrupt in that sense as far as self and self-preservation and what we're striving to do. The petrodollar that must be upheld and anything that shakes at or interferes with that is a matter of war. It just is. Some other thing might be an excuse, but it's about this. Just over oil. Going on. This one commodity alone has been the catalyst for wars over the past few decades. This is unhinging the very system the world economy has relied upon, and yet many nations hate this very system because of the petrodollar. That's what they hate. They're learning to hate more and more this country, the United States. Other nations are tied to the dollar, and if the dollar falls, so does their national revenue. Therefore, many feel trapped with the need to support it. It's a catch-22. It really is. It's a catch-22. What do they do? Even today, as this is being written, it seemed insane that oil was about to drop below $10 a barrel. But then it just got worse as it lurched into negative territory. In the past, such a thing was unheard of until now. This alone could easily lead to war. It's just another item that's causing rippling anger to be stirred up between nations on a magnitude that is unprecedented, truly is. And when you think about this, because when you talk about commodities like oil, you're talking about futures, and money is put into that. And you perhaps are thinking a certain amount, what is the future going to be for it? What is it going to be selling for then? So you, it's kind of like gambling, you know, that's basically what it is. So you're thinking ahead about something that you have no proof of how it's going to come out, but you're trying to have a bit of intellect somehow involved in that, but you're still spinning the wheel because you really don't know what might happen in the world. So people take their chances in those things and have gotten by with a lot and have done in a carnal sort of way fairly well with some of those, many people have. But now, because of what's happened, people who had oil marked at $70, $60, $50, because you see, it's a futures contract and you're tied into that. And if you can't do certain things and you have a certain loss and it gets down lower and lower, it gets to the point where I'm simplifying this a little bit. You got to pay someone else to take it off your hands because you can't take it. You can't sell it to anybody. Nobody wants it because they don't have any place to store it. So your price has to go down, down, down. It gets in a negative territory. That's what basically is taking place in some of this. Going to go through a bunch of news articles. I'm going to go through a few because this is where we are. This is just a couple of weeks away or so now from Pentecost. But I just want to go through a few articles here just so we can get a bit of a glimpse of what's taking place at this point in time and realizing that who would have ever thought a pandemic, coronavirus, come along and shake the world like it has and kind of speed up the process of economies crashing, of things coming down as far as trade and everything else that's out there and destroying a nation, destroying nations all over the world because there's just a lot of people who can't come through this. No matter how much money they might be given by banks and so forth and not able to make ends meet, not able to hold up to what they had signed up for when it's all said and done. And the number of places that are going to go bankrupt because of this, who are already bankrupt because of this, it's staggering, and they really haven't been able to add that up because they've been too focused on, with narrow eyesight here, something else. wearing masks, when to take them off, when not to take them off, how to do this, how to do that. And it's been a distraction that's helped a lull to sleep. What's really happening? Here's one. China, Iran are on the march. There is so much focus on the COVID-19 pandemic right now that Americans can't be blamed if they're not spending much time studying other developments. Well, Americans don't tend to study other developments anyway. They hear a bunch of garbage on the news and don't really know what's happening in the news anyway and don't really have much interest in the news as far as the world is concerned. More concerned about things happening locally and nice little stories of what somebody might be doing out here that's so good and helpful to others and just focused on those things, totally blind to what's really happening. It says that's understandable, but attention may be as dangerous. But inattention may be as dangerous as the virus itself. That's because America's adversaries are taking advantage of the situation by challenging U.S. interests in a set of geopolitical hotspots. They believe we're too distracted by the virus containment effort to mount a firm response. At the same time, so others are pushing, China primarily, pushing as much as they can in different areas and trying to take advantage of our pulling back, which we have done. At the same time, the geopolitical confrontation is a classic way to rally a population against an outside threat, especially when they're still hurting from the pandemic and the economic consequences. So other countries, which this country has done too, using this as a way to gain power, as a way sometimes to exert power against others, because now the sway of sentiment is against China, and so pulling away from them, China doing the same thing in a reverse sort of way, it's the United States' fault, and rallying people behind that concept and this attitude and stirring them up, where does it lead? It says it's one of the oldest tricks in the books to get the people behind the government. Power plays, power, it's about trying to control going on. This appears to be the case with China and Iran right now. China in particular, is trying to divert attention away from its own cover-up of the pandemic, which allowed it to spin out of control. So it's engaging in a global propaganda campaign to try to blame the U.S. for the spread of the virus. I think this isn't important, but it is, because others want, you know, sometimes people just want to believe bad things about others. It's easy to do. We've experienced that in the church. They don't like it. They don't like the beliefs. So I want to believe bad things about them. So whatever is stated, it's got to be true. And so the same thing is true with nations right now. So people are willing to take sides with China. There are a lot of nations out here that say, yeah, United States. You know, that's the way they think, because they've learned to hate the U.S., the petrodollar, and other things as well. The bullying that's taken place over so long a time now. They're fed up. It's just the way it is. It's the truth. Both China and Iran have lied about the damage caused by the virus in their own countries. So they've done that, as well as blaming it on the United States. Going on here, just jumping down. In the past 10 years, we've been through currency wars, trade wars, and now pandemic. Our shooting wars next. You know, people are talking about it, starting to. You know, more and more. Every week you read something. It's just kind of mind-boggling that people are actually talking about it. To the depth they believe it? Don't know. Pay attention to China, Iran, and yes, North Korea. They haven't gone away either. The world is a dangerous place, and the virus has only made it more dangerous because people are pulling back. People are focusing more. This has forced people to focus more inward than ever before, truly have. Going to read some more here, but talked about how I skipped over one page here. Not surprisingly, it says China has tried to take advantage of the situation by acting aggressively in the South China Sea and threatening Taiwan. The South China Sea is a large arm of the Pacific Ocean surrounded by China, Vietnam, Philippines, Malaysia, Brunei, and Indonesia. All six countries have claims to the exclusive economic zones that extend several hundred miles from their coastlines. Farther down here it says, China has ignored all those claims and treaties and insists that it is in control of the entire body of water, including islands, reefs, and underwater natural resources such as oil, natural gas, undersea minerals and fisheries. They're just taking control. China has also become more aggressive by designating the South China Sea reefs as city-level administrative units to be administered by mainland China. And China has pumped sand onto reefs to build artificial islands that have then been fortified with airstrips, harbors, troops, and missiles. We know all these things, but people just keep letting it happen. They just keep building up. Where's that leading to? The U.S. operates Freedom of Navigation cruises with U.S. Navy ships to demonstrate that the U.S. also rejects China's claims. It's not difficult to envision an incident that could rapidly escalate into something serious. It's also fair to assume that a weakened U.S. Navy has emboldened Chinese actions recently. Two aircraft carriers of the Navy in the Western Pacific, the Theodore Roosevelt and the Ronald Reagan, were both taken out of action due to outbreaks of the coronavirus among the crews. That's been a dramatic reduction in power projection in the region. Incredible. Another, just different articles, just the headlines itself say this, and this was as of last week here, the end of the week. China's exploiting the COVID-19 pandemic to expand in Asia. Well, obvious. China faces economic reckoning as COVID-19 turns world against globalization. Trump, Brexit, trade war, the forces against globalization have been gathering pace since 2008. It's amazing how often you read that. Now the coronavirus threatens the knockout blow. Another headline. Turbocharging exodus. U.S. beats trade war drums to remove supply chain out of China. Well, been talking about that. That's what's happening. China warns of possible armed conflict with U.S. over coronavirus backlash. They're talking it. How long does it take to go from talk to action? Well, we're going to find out, aren't we? Another article. Not a bluff. White House might pull U.S. military and intelligence from U.K. over China. This is over Huawei and the 5G thing that the U.S. doesn't want to be in Europe. Europe's already accepted it on the mainland. Boris Johnson, Trump got into it over this as well. And so there's this pressure that the U.S. still has been putting on Great Britain. I believe it was just last week now I heard in the news that now attitudes have changed against China out of Britain, and they're not going to go through with Huawei all of a sudden. Incredible things that are going on. Ephraim. China moves to wean itself of U.S. dollar dependence, steps up testing of sovereign digital currency. Plans, but things can change in those plans to accelerate quickly and turn into war before they have a chance to do some of these things. Another one here. Almost certain. Media raises alarms over new alleged North Korea missile facility. Now, this comes out of RT News, Russian news, sponsored. And kind of interesting here why they pump certain ideas out here as well. Because there's a reason why they would want to pump some of these ideas out there. And again, the crazy world we live in, it truly is things that are taking place and what's going to happen when it's all said and done, whether it be North Korea or some other country that uses as a guise of being someone else when they shoot off whatever they're going to shoot off to make it appear to be from that country. It could be something of that nature as well. Another one here. That's what I was talking about a moment ago. Britain undergoing a mindset change toward Beijing, says leading lawmaker. And then it was after that that they backed out of Huawei. And another one here. A controller warns 1 in 5 jobs will evaporate as New York City faces biggest crisis since the Great Depression. Another one. Layoffs start turning from temporary to permanent across America. Belgium accuses China of bioespionage, biological warfare program, and vaccine experts targeted. Another one. Biblical wave of bankruptcies is about to flood the U.S. Things are coming very bad, and it's not going to take that long because this can't go on like this, and the damage has already been done. Another one, Beijing may dump U.S. treasuries in response to U.S. hostility, start its own QE, quantitative easing. Another one, China readies unveiling a stealth nuclear bomber capable of reaching L.A. Over and over again, things that are being talked about that you wouldn't read 2 or 3 years ago or before in the same way, week after week now. It just reveals how close we're getting, closer and closer and closer. U.S. to remove Patriot missile protection from Saudi Arabia over oil apocalypse. As tensions between OPEC and Washington rise over the supply and price of oil globally amid a pandemic-driven demand collapse, it would appear President Trump may have just gone nuclear. The Wall Street Journal reports that the U.S. is removing Patriot anti-missile systems from Saudi Arabia and is considering reductions to other military capabilities. Well, on and on it goes. Not really good relationships. Some things they've done in the past that are beginning to catch up with them, and the United States beginning to take hold of that because we're not as dependent on oil out of there anymore. Before, there was this little love affair going on and putting up with a bunch of garbage and so forth ever since 9/11, and now things are changing. Another one here, historic Euro-dollar panic. Negative rates now expected as soon as November. It's just closing in around the entire world, squeezing everyone. U.S. B-1B bombers fly near Chinese airspace amid new Cold War threat. Companies are far more terrified than they were in 2008. These kinds of articles. And I've really been dumbfounded by this. God's final witness. And it just keeps going back to that, and people realizing what's coming, we're in for it. It's going to happen sooner or later. Another one, mortgage lenders tighten screws on U.S. credit in echo of 2008. Again, another one, a tragic record. For the first time ever, more than half of the United States population is not working. A V-shaped recovery will not be possible. Today's job losses reflect a 40% GDP crash. What amazes me sometimes by some of the different ones I hear talking, different governors and so forth, and they're in a quandary. Now, some aren't even seemingly bright enough to figure some of this out. They're cutting their own throat in some ways because where are the taxes that they have to function by going to come from for states that are already hurting like they are? It's like, can Uncle Sam just take care of all that? Is that going to happen? And what about all the taxes coming in there? Where does all this money come from? How does this get taken care of? It's like that's not even a question anymore. It's going to come crashing down at some point. Beijing media calls for quadrupling China's nuclear weapons as U.S. continues encirclement. Over and over and over again, article after article that just boggle the mind sometimes. Well, I'm going to stop there, but hope we're not losing sight of the reality of time and where we are and the direction things are moving. I want to read the last part of the book now. Time is not on our side any longer, as everything is beginning to cry out that the world has arrived to the point of final prophetic events that are about to be unleashed in this last period of the end time. That final period begins with World War III and ends with the return of Christ. Pentecost, some Pentecost. From this time forward, the world is somewhat living on borrowed time. Indeed it is. The time to act is now. The time to prepare, if these events have not already started by the time you read this, is right now. Remember, if you will listen to God, He will listen to you. Awesome. So, again here, think about where we are. I want to read that first sentence of the paragraph just before the last one here. Time is not on our side any longer, as everything is beginning to cry out that the world has arrived to the point of the final prophetic events that are about to be unleashed in this last period of the end time. thought it'd be good at this point here for those who have been around from the beginning of the count when it began, going all the way back to the apostasy. Others have been called in at various steps along the way. Matter of fact, the majority of people have been called along at some point later on, mostly beyond 2000, on up to 2005, 6 and 7, 8 and through there. Most has taken place during that period of time. But I think about those, whether it be from the beginning of the apostasy or along the way, think about what you have experienced already. Think about, as I mentioned earlier, struck by the fact of what it said in prophesied end time, and when talking about the seals, still looking ahead to certain things that hadn't been revealed yet. Hadn't been revealed, the importance of 2008 and God's final witness. That hadn't happened, prophesied in time. We didn't know exactly where we were being taken as a church. Didn't know what was going to take place, that a new doctrine or truth, if you would come along to help us to understand when Christ would return to this earth on a Pentecost instead of a trumpets, and how much that would cause a rippling effect in the church and candidly change a lot of things for us that we've gone through already. So, how many experience this? You've already experienced. Oh, I hit my mic. That probably made a horrible sound. How many experience the first seal open, the apostasy that took place at the end of 1994? Well, you look backward maybe if you came in later, but it hasn't been that long. But consider this. Then that which continued over the following months and through the first 3.5 years of the second, third, and fourth seals being opened. So that just continued on until the end of that 3.5 year period where God protected us, where the remnant hadn't been established yet. And then the fifth seal and this transition that took place right at that time as the fifth seal was opened in a transitional period from the end of that period and the beginning of a new one for God's church, the remnant era, the remnant people of God, as God had reestablished the church now as a remnant to continue on to Christ's coming to that point in time. So a lot of things already we've seen, we've witnessed these things up to the fifth seal. And then the sixth seal that God gave us understanding and knowledge of that took place toward the end of, the sixth seal. Opened a little bit later. I jumped ahead to the other one, but the seventh. But the sixth seal that was open at the time that the first thunder also sounded on 9/11. God revealed to us that was the beginning of that period of time. And then finally, up to November and December of 2008, we experienced the beginning of the opening of the seventh seal, complete. And yet there's a period of time in there which has to do with the seven trumpets. And even those already sounded, but their events haven't taken place. So God had revealed very clearly that there are certain things that took place in those months, and understanding of certain things that would lead up to the fifth end time prophetic period that led up to Pentecost of 2012. And we've lived through all of that. And I just think, what an incredible thing. We've seen all these things, and then we read about something like this, and to me it strikes me. Seven seals now. And seven trumpets have already sounded, and we know what we're waiting for. The beginning of the events of those trumpets, when first, second, third, and fourth will take place very rapidly together at the beginning of World War III. How far away is that? Maybe very close. Maybe a few years. I don't know. But we'd better be prepared as though it's very soon, because it could happen very soon. But I marvel that we're keeping a Pentecost now, a year after a focus that we had leading us up to 2019, and how incredible that has been, because we have witnessed, we have seen a lot as God's church. We truly have. I was going to spend time in going through some of this, but I really don't need to in Revelation 7, where it talks about this and the events that are right in front of us, because we know what has to take place before those final events happen. And those events, obviously, not to happen within that prophetic seven end time periods of account that have led us up to Pentecost of 2019. We've come a long way since the apostasy. And what's remaining is a short period of time in comparison, truly is. So we have a long period of time we've gone through, we've witnessed, we've seen, we've learned, we've grown as God's people, and we have a short period of time, and we look forward to a particular period of time. So again, to go through all this, to realize what's getting ready to take place, when the final sealing takes place, because then it can begin and hopefully happen quickly and not be very long in its duration, because it's going to be horrifying in ways that we can't even begin to imagine, truly. So we're picturing today the fulfillment of the wave loaves. We recognize that the wave sheaf was offered at a particular time, tied in together with the wave loaves pictured in this, in the coming of the kingdom of God that happens on a Pentecost. It's a beautiful picture about the first fruits of God, that the sealing, perhaps very, very close now, and when it does, then it won't be long until that great resurrection that takes place, and those who are waved up before God, 144,000, to be accepted by Him, to be in His family Elohim, to be in His kingdom, to rule and reign with Christ for 1,100 plus years. What an incredible thing. This holy day of Pentecost 2020.